New York City is about to start an ambulance service for organs. The Rapid Organ Recovery Ambulance is designed to preserve the organs of the newly deceased so that they'll be available for transplant. There are long lines of people waiting for hearts and kidneys, and proponents say this service will save lives. Critics worry that it might divert resources from the treatment of the living and raise questions about whether EMTs and doctors gave every effort to save a patient's life or moved too quickly to harvest organs. If you're waitlisted for an organ, if you work on an ambulance or in an emergency room, we want to hear from you. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Dr. Richard O'Brien, an emergency room doctor at Moses Taylor Hospital in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and a spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physicians, with us on the phone from Scranton. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
And how would this rapid organ recovery ambulance service work?
What, I'm not from New York City, but from what I understand is it's a specially trained ambulance crew that would go out and try to procure the newly deceased and make it possible for organ transplant to happen quicker.
And they would then work even as the transport is underway to ensure that those organs would be available for transplant.
But when you think about it, there is an awful lot of delay in organ transplantation, and like you said, there are many, many, many people on the list, something like 99,000 right now, waitlisted for organ transplants. The idea, the concept is very interesting, and you can understand why a lot of people would be behind it.
But there is also a shortage of ambulances in many places. Couldn't these vehicles, some would argue, be put to better use to serve the living?
That's one of my personal concerns. When an ambulance picks up a patient or several patients at a disaster, they're out of service for the rest of their area, whatever area they serve. And if you could consider someone being picked up that's deceased, that ambulance conceivably is out of service for the living in that area. And unless they have special arrangements for coverage, you wonder whether this is going to be a taking care of the deceased versus the living situation, and that becomes a huge ethical dilemma.
And there's another situation, let me put it to you, a mass casualty incident, a bus crash, a train wreck, that sort of thing. Lots of injured people who need help, yet also, sadly, lots of otherwise healthy people who got killed and whose organs might be very good for transplant.
And that is the case, and obviously if you're sitting in a hospital somewhere waiting for a new kidney, you have a completely different view of it than you have if you've dialed 911 because you have chest pain. But I think the balancing act is where the ethics come down, and obviously the Emergency Medical Services works for the living, and they have to go and help those that are salvageable first.
Joining us now is Arthur Kaplan. He's director of the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Bioethics. He joins us from Audio Edit Studios in Chicago, Illinois, and it's good to have you back on the program.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
And we've heard some of the ethical issues brought up by Dr. O'Brien. Nevertheless, I know you also have some other concerns.
There are a couple of other concerns here. It's a tough call on this one. One is, who are you going to take as a potential organ donor? Are you going to take anyone who is newly dead that you think might be a source of organs? Are you only going to take people who have a donor card or who someone says, yeah, I think they wanted to be an organ donor? There are some number of Americans who don't want to do this. There are some number of Americans who, on religious grounds, don't want to do this. There's going to have to be some very careful thought given to who it is that is put in that ambulance just for the purposes of getting their parts to the hospital. A second issue is, when you're in the ambulance, they're going to have to do things to you. They have to put lines in you. They may put certain preservative fluids into you. I think some Americans are going to say, you know what, I don't want them touching me. I didn't give my consent. They're doing this without knowing whether I want to be an organ donor, whether I want this done at all. I worry that we're going to have some pushback here. Traditionally, people who are organ donors are and have these things done to them, it comes after either their card is found that they want to do it or the family says okay. But in this case, you've got procedures being done to a person without any consent. And that's a tough area to be in American medicine these days.
Yet, Dr. O'Brien, the other side of that equation is that, you're also losing opportunities and you're losing time.
This is true. But, the way I look at it, too, the best way to keep the organs alive is to keep the patient alive. And obviously, we err on the side of trying to save the patient. That's what we all do. And that's what Emergency Medical Services is set up to do. That's the unique thing about this New York City idea, this unique ambulance, that ideally the sole purpose of this particular crew would be to get a newly deceased person as a patient.
Dr. Kaplan, there are also, these are sort of the eternal concerns about harvesting of organs, people who fear that some people's interest is, in fact, harvesting their organs, not keeping them alive.
Well, sad to say, that is a worry that a number of Americans have. If you looked around, Neil, and said, what's a major hindrance to getting people to sign donor cards, a lot of people will tell you they worry that if they carry a card, they fear they're not going to be treated aggressively if they get sick and go to the hospital. Tends to be people without health insurance, tends to be poorer people, but it's a very real fear that a lot of folks have. Now, if you tell them, hey, you know, we don't have health insurance for you, and if you get sick, the only place you can go is an ER, but we're sending a special ambulance out to your neighborhood. If you're newly dead, we'll make sure you get into the hospital in that case. You can see where a little tension might build.
Does this, as a practical matter, Dr. O'Brien, how often does this tension emerge?
I've never seen it in 21 years of clinical emergency medicine. We do not check to see whether you're an organ donor or not when we go out to get you. I did 2 years of Life Flight as a helicopter doctor, and believe me, I never looked in a wallet. I never asked about organ donation. I tried to see viable patients. I personally was at the scene of 2 plane crashes, and you try to see the most viable patients you can, the ones that you can help, and you get them to the hospital, you get them to the trauma center. That is a very real fear. I understand that, but it is not a reality. I have never, ever, ever seen anybody treated in any different way, as if they were an organ donor or they weren't. You know, they were all treated.
I don't think there's any evidence, Neil, that the fear is grounded. Even when you get to the hospital, I think there's no reason whatsoever to suggest or hint that somehow if you're carrying a card that says you want to be an organ donor, people are going to give up on you because they want the parts for someone else. But as a fear, as a concern, it is very, very real on the part of many. And, you know, the other issue is, as I said, we got about a quarter of the population with no health insurance, and they're having a hard time getting basic health care. But here comes the special ambulance that says, well, your parts are worth something to others, and we can make money installing them in others. We'll make sure to get those.
We're talking with Dr. Richard O'Brien, an emergency room physician at Moses Taylor Hospital in Scranton, also a spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physicians, and with ethicist Dr. Arthur Kaplan, 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, we want to speak to people who are either maybe on the waiting list for a transplant or maybe those who work in emergency rooms or on ambulances. Give us a call. Again, it's 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and we'll go to Lorraine. Lorraine's with us from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to really echo the sentiment of Dr. Brian that I was a paramedic. I'm retired now for 20 years, and it really never happens. The paramedics on a fire engine or ambulance come, and their whole chief goal is to save your life. And again, we don't check any of those things, and I just never, ever, even in the worst accidents and circumstances, even though we knew maybe that that patient would die, we just never stopped short of going the whole way and doing the best we could do to save that life. And I can't imagine that anyone in emergency service now, in New York or in any state, would fall short to say, oh, let's just save these organs. But it also occurs to me that the paramedics and firemen and people on the scene, they might be the ones that would be calling the ER doctor in the emergency room and saying, what about, should we dispatch this ambulance, or should we, you know, should we be a part in retrieving that special emergency medical service?
And Lorraine, given your experience as a paramedic, do you think this special designated ambulance to collect the newly dead for organ transplants, do you think that could work?
I think it could work, but I think there has to be some significant regulation, and I think there would have to be some specific circumstances that would be okay. Also, I think that you're never very far from a trauma center nowadays. I mean, there's everywhere is pretty close, except for the very farthest rural areas, and by helicopter, those are reachable as well. So it seems to me that getting them to the facility that could then administer all of that care might be a better route that maybe would alleviate some of the fears of the general public.
Can I jump in here, Neil?
Go ahead, Dr. O'Brien.
Also, let's echo the fact that I don't think a paramedic or an EMT or a doctor or a nurse in an ambulance service would ever check the insurance status of a patient.
Never. Absolutely
never.
Not. It just never happens. I mean, I suppose in a story it could, but and be exactly on television. Right. But in real life, that is just not how it works.
Emergency medicine.
And Neil, let me jump in here.
Go ahead,
let me
Arthur
jump
Kappa.
In. I don't think the issue is emergency medicine being picky, so to speak, about insured or not insured, although there are certainly private ambulances out there that tend to want to avoid people who can't pay. That is a reality. But I think what I'm talking about is the perception. If you're a poor person in a community and somebody says, you don't have health insurance, but you can get, if you do die, a special ambulance will come out here. And by the way, don't wonder about that ambulance being diverted, as often happens in my city of Philadelphia, having to jump past two or three places because they're full or they just won't take anybody anymore. But the special ambulance, if you're dead, yeah, that's going to get right in and you're going to get special attention. There, we have a country that has tremendous disparities in access, not to ambulance care and not even sometimes to the ER, but just generally getting to the hospital. I suspect you're going to see some pushback from some folks who are going to say, you let me in the hospital when I'm newly dead for my parts. How about you let me in the hospital when I'm just sick?
Yeah. Lorraine, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks so much.
We're talking about New York's new organ recovery ambulance service. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Laura. Laura with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi. I work in neurology, and I have been called to the ICU on multiple occasions and to make a decision regarding brain death, and I've been pushed by the organ procurement people to make a call regarding brain death before it was possible. And I was greatly concerned that the organ procurement people were contacted before I was.
Oh, so they were already in the room ready to go as soon as you, and then you came in to see
exactly
if the person was actually dead.
And they've had the chart and approached me and said, hurry up, we need these organs.
There's, of course, no doubt that they do need those organs. There are thousands of people waiting for them.
Exactly, but I think it's inappropriate that that they're there pushing me because I'm supposed to be
the patient's advocate.
Yes, the patient's advocate, or even to be neutral. And I have been very pressured very, very hard. And it's also awkward that the families are asking me, who are those people? So they weren't aware of any of this going on. And I totally understand that there's a need for the organs, but I just feel that there's too much pressure in some situations to be the patient's advocate or to be neutral in this, mm-hmm. as a physician.
Arthur Kaplan, that's sort of outside the structure that we were talking about in terms of emergency rooms and ambulances, but nevertheless, the same kinds of ethical conflicts.
Same kinds of ethical conflicts. So the moral principle America is operated by in trying to help those who need organs for transplant is that you have to be pronounced dead by people independent from those who come to get the organs. And you don't want to cross what's called the dead donor rule, or if you will, the dead donor line. People shouldn't be present from organ procurement until someone is pronounced dead. One of the difficulties with the ambulance situation is the people who are going to have to do the pronouncing now out in the field of death are probably the people who are going to be involved with taking the body back for purposes of procurement. So the line gets blurry. That's why I'm much more comfortable if this system was set up to say, we're only going to start with people who have a donor card where we find it, or we're going to ask people, survivors or family members, if they think the person might have wanted to be an organ donor. I get nervous if you're just going to start this bringing everyone in and doing procedures on them. I think you're going to build some distrust and pushback that way.
Dr. O'Brien, as a practical matter, is that possible? Is it preferable?
It's certainly preferable to involve the family. In fact, if you go to one of the websites where you can become a donor, organdonor.gov, it will say you should tell your family what your wishes are if you fill out one of these cards. And in many states, the family will have to sign some sort of permission slip to allow procurement of organs. It is obviously preferable for the family to be involved in the decision and to know fully what's going on with their deceased person or their nearly deceased person. And I can really feel for that physician who had to make the call on brain death. because sometimes the call is not that easy to make, and you as an independent physician should not be pushed one way or the other, and I completely agree with Dr. Kaplan, where we're concerned that the decisions will be made quickly. And again, very serious policies and procedures have to be followed to the letter. And I agree that perhaps people that are known organ donors should be the first person that are looked at with this ambulance service.
Laura, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Finally, let me ask you, Dr. O'Brien, this is not yet in effect, or it's going to be in effect in New York City fairly soon. As I understand it, Philadelphia and other places are also looking at it. Do you think this is going to become more widespread?
I think that remains to be seen, but obviously a situation like this will work better in a large city. It would never work in a small town. Scranton, Pennsylvania, perhaps not, but when there are a fair number of deaths per hour, you would have more potential organ donors. And, when you think that 17 people a day die waiting for organs in the United States, hopefully that number will be reduced tremendously if this can be done ethically and in a regulatory fashion where everyone is satisfied.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We know you're busy.
Thank you, sir.
That's Dr. Richard O'Brien, an emergency room doctor at Moses Taylor Hospital in Scranton, Pennsylvania, a spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physicians, with us by phone from Scranton. And Arthur Kaplan, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thanks very much.
Arthur Kaplan is director of the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Bioethics. He was with us today from Audio Edit Studios in Chicago, Illinois. Tomorrow we'll broadcast from the museum again. Join us for Philip Gurevich on his new book about Abu Ghraib. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News in Washington.